Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean.
All right, glad you're with us. Happy Monday. And write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN. I see the Oscars, Jimmy Kimmel down 16%. All this, you know, Me Too, Time's Up. I've never seen such hypocrisy in my entire lifetime. And yet, the people of this country, they get it. Hollywood doesn't get it. People get it. And they're tired of the hypocrisy. Did you see how many armed guards there were as these limousines and these Escalades and special vehicles pulled up at the Oscars? You had 500 armed policemen that taxpayers paying for to be at the Oscars. God knows how many private armed security people were at the Oscars as well. There were guns everywhere. It wasn't a gun-free zone at the Oscars. You would think that if, you know, all these people that are afraid of guns and, you know, as long as they're taken care of, as long as they're safe, doesn't matter with the rest of us. We have to have schools be gun-free zones. They can't have guns in them. Well, 98% of shootings take place in gun-free zones. I didn't see, thank God, any shooting at the Oscars last night because it would have been met with overwhelming force in seconds, which is the way it should be in American schools. It's just such hypocrisy, you know. Some people, I'm sure they're sincere. They want to get rid of the Me Too, Time Is Up, and all these things going on. This is the same people in Hollywood that took a child rapist who had plied a 13-year-old girl with booze and quaaludes, Roman Polanski, and he can't even leave. He's in France right now. He should be extradited and charged completely. He skipped out of the country to avoid the charges against him. But then he wins sort of in absentia. He wins an Oscar a number of years ago. And what do we have? We have the biggest applause I've ever heard at an Oscars. Let's listen to this.
And the Oscar goes to Roman Polanski for The Pianist.
How do you take it seriously when the same Hollywood puts this guy up on a pedestal and they've had, you know, differing attempts at letter writing and different petitions that they put together to get Roman Polanski so he could come back to the United States and not face charges of child rape? Again, a 13-year-old girl he's given quaaludes and alcohol to and rapes this girl. By the way, not once either. Oh, but he's in France. But celebrate his art. Let's celebrate. The crowd was so excited. Yeah, now I'm supposed to take a lot of these same people seriously on Me Too and Time Is Up? I think not. I'm not looking to them to be the moral arbiters of anybody. And then the same with guns. I'm looking at all the armed policemen there, and I'm saying, yeah, okay, the opposite of a gun-free zone in America's schools. And then I'm thinking, oh, these are the same people that fly in their private jets all around the world, but they'll lecture you about riding an Escalade or a sport utility vehicle or a caravan because you have enough kids that you have to, you know, sport around town every day. And when are we ever going to get an award for just the great people every day that make the country great? You know, the people that get up every single day. When do they get their award ceremony? The people that work hard, play by the rules, pay their taxes, raise their kids, obey the laws of the land. Where's their ceremony? How many, you know, let's pat each other on the back and wear, you know, $10,000 gowns that you're never going to wear again and rent, you know, $100,000 worth of jewels that aren't even yours so you can look your absolute best. Spend an entire spa day getting ready for the big night and getting your hair and your makeup and your nails and this and that. I mean, it's ridiculous. And so many people, they're down 16%, but people like this. The only thing, as I watched a little of it last night at the beginning at 8 o'clock, I have my Sunday viewing habits, and I usually check in and at least see if there's anything decent on 60 Minutes. It wasn't too good. But I'm really waiting for Homeland at 9 o'clock. Oh, last night's episode was amazing. But between 8 and 9 o'clock, I tune in. I'm watching the beginning of it. And it comes out with all their predictable jokes about Donald Trump. And they're not even funny. And Mike Pence and Fox News. And I'm like, there wasn't anything I laughed at. Now, on Saturday night, we had the Gridiron Dinner. And Donald Trump went. I have never been to one of these events. I've never been to the Gridiron Dinner, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the Al Smith Dinner. I've never been to any of them. And I can't be more proud of myself for having never gone. I'd rather never go, ever. And there were years Fox was literally apoplectic with me because I refused to go. And they literally demanded it about 10 years ago, you're going. You have to go. And you're going to sit at this table. And this is what you're going to do. Oh, that year, I just happened to get I was sick that Friday and I couldn't go. I don't know where it happened. I never get sick, but I got sick that week and I just happened to miss it again. And then finally,
were you better on Saturday morning?
Oh, 100%.
I'm sure you were.
I was better on Friday night. I was better when I made the phone call saying,
was that
I'm
your
sick.
Tuxedo allergy?
I have. Yes, it was my tuxedo allergy. Once I've gotten offered a lot of money to do speeches, but you got to wear a tux. I'm like, no, thanks. I'm out. I do have a tux, but it has a regular black tie. And it's one of those stupid shiny ones, but it's, you know, it's just not my style, not my thing. Look, I'll accept a simple, undeniable truth. Most in the mainstream corrupt media hate me, and I hate them. Not hate, because that would be the wrong thing.
You don't have hate for anyone.
No, you do hate, though.
And I don't either.
You do so.
No.
You even said last week you admitted that you
have. I have one person.
Who?
This one.
Who?
She's very cute, though.
Who is it?
Very attractive girl.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. All right. By the way, irrational as it is. So the president apparently was amazingly funny. Now, it's hard when you have a roast. Do you remember they used to have the Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin roast? You can actually, if you're up at 4 in the morning ever like I am, you'll find they have infomercials of them. And this is back in the day. This is the Rat Pack day. Ronald Reagan was part of these. I mean, they were brutal to each other, and it was rip-roaring funny. You know, like I always thought like Jackie Gleason was one of the funniest guys ever, ever. The Honeymooners to this day makes me laugh. Fawlty Towers is another one, even though John Cleese is a big liberal. That was a great, great show. And there were other great shows like that, and these people were funny. So the president started out, said, I'm sorry I was late because Jared Kushner couldn't get through security. That was pretty brutal. He goes, who do you think's going to leave the White House next, Stephen Miller or Melania? That was pretty funny. Then he takes a dig at the media and Steve Bannon. And he goes on to say, according to the White House pool report, he goes after Bannon joking that he's the very best reporter in D.C. The guy leaked more than the Titanic. Trump joked that Pence is just waiting for his impeachment. Well, you know, it's funny. It's based on the headlines. And he suggested that Tillerson should smoke a peace pipe with the North Koreans. And he joked about Jeff Sessions. You know, he offered a ride to the event with Sessions, but Sessions recused himself, which I thought was a good one, too. And Trump compared being president to hosting the Apprentice. In one job, I had to manage a cutthroat cast of characters desperate for TV time, totally unprepared for their roles and their jobs, and each week afraid of having their asses fired. In the other job, I was a host of a smash television hit, which was pretty good. Look, you have to have a very good sense of humor to be willing to subject yourself to that. You just do. All right, so we have some updates in the Mueller case, and this is pretty interesting. Number one, we're told that Devin Nunes has gotten the answers to the 10 questions that he requested of many of top Obama administration officials about the dossier. I don't think we're going to get it until we get on TV tonight at 9, so we'll have that for you when that breaks. Remember, Nunes also is requesting the DOJ provide answers to what the committee, meaning him, deemed as a violation of FBI protocols in obtaining the warrant against Carter Page. Remember, the FBI-owned protocols say that they themselves must verify that information. They haven't done it. And I'm watching this. All of this now is leading in a really interesting direction because you got two sets of reality in America. One is Robert Mueller's America, which I think is just get Trump at any cost and using his, you know, his big donors to Obama, Clinton, and, of course, the Democratic National Party. So Mueller puts out a list, a subpoena for all communications, emails, texts, handwritten notes for Carter Page, Lewandowski, the president, Hope Hicks. The president, by the way, doesn't use email and he doesn't text. Keith Schiller, who is his former bodyguard, Michael Cohen, Manafort, Gates, Roger Stone, and Steve Bannon. So he has that out. Then I'm noticing that, you know, Mueller is now actually looking at whether or not, why are we looking into the UAE at this point? Oh, is that basically this investigation has no limits to it whatsoever? Haven't we lost sight of what the original mandate is? But I have my own list of things that I want. Mueller's focus on an advisor to Emirates suggesting a broader investigation. What was the mandate? It was supposed to be about Russia. It's like the Manafort indictment doesn't talk about Russia at all. And it doesn't talk about any time he was with the Trump campaign. And the same thing goes for, you know, okay, lying to the FBI, General Flynn. But if Mueller's going to subpoena all these people, well, I want to subpoena Mueller. And I think Mueller ought to hand over his emails, his text, and his handwritten notes, because I want to know why he didn't listen to the informant within Putin's organization in America when they were trying to get a hold of America's uranium, which successfully they did because Mueller didn't stop it. So we can get him. We can get Sally Yates. We can get Sid Vicious Blumenthal. Then, of course, we can get Bruce and Nellie Orr and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Susan Rice has to be on the list. Let's get her emails. Let's get her text messages and handwritten notes. James Comey is up to his eyeballs in what I think is illegal activity. Let's see what he's got. Let's see what Bill and Hillary Clinton have. Let's see what Obama has. Let's see what Samantha Power has. Let's see what Ben Rhodes has. Let's see what Andrew McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, has. Let's see what Loretta Lynch has. So I got my own list of people, and that's only the short list. I got a lot of other people on that. Jeannie Rake should be on the list for one. Andrew Weissman should be on the list. Let's add him to the list. Let's subpoena his stuff. James Rebicki, Cody Shearer. Let's add him to the list. Rod Rosenstein to the list. Baker should be to the list. James Baker. I got my list, too. You know, he's got his and I've got mine, considering we're apparently in two different parallel universes here. All right, 800-941-SEAN. Sarah Carter coming up in the course of the program today. And wait till you hear what they did to poor Cheryl Atkinson, spying on her computers and then stealing her hard drive. She'll explain. You know, this is a pretty fascinating find. I'm not the biggest fan of the New Yorker. There's a liberal writer there, Jane Mayer, and there's a long piece by her where she's arguing that the Steele dossier is mostly credible, which we know is not true. And that's why the FBI took it seriously. Putting all that aside, you know, and as far as Golden Shower Gate goes, the allegation, Mayer notes that Steele had four sources for the story. Yeah, all Russians that he was paying. But she quotes others as doubting the veracity. But anyway, if they're going to make the claim the Steele dossier was mostly credible, then they should have definitely said to the judge who paid for it. But we have 15 organizations still 20 months later digging into the Steele dossier and its veracity. Anyway, it turns out that Steele reported in his dossier that the actual hacking of DNC email servers came from within the Democratic Party itself. Now, this is very key because we read this weekend that Robert Mueller actually might be on the verge of indicting Russians. Now, all these Russians he's indicting are never coming to the United States for trial. There's never going to be any extradition. All they are political statements by the special counsel's office. So it's a game that Robert Mueller is playing. But if he's going to go down that road, and Jane Mayer makes the case that in July of 2016, when WikiLeaks revealed the DNC emails, Steele filed yet another memo, this time claiming that the Kremlin was behind the hacking, which was part of a Russian cyber war against Hillary's campaign, and many of the details seem far-fetched. Steele's sources claim that the digital attack involved agents, quote, within the Democratic Party structure itself, as well as, you know, other Russians in the U.S. and associated offensive cyber operators. Well, we actually went to the source, which, by the way, if Robert Mueller cared about the truth, there would be a cyber fingerprint in terms of where did Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks never proven wrong in 11 years, whether you like WikiLeaks or not. I asked him directly, hey, Julian, did this come from Russia? Here's what he said.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
Nothing. Okay. So if Mueller just comes up with mystery Russians that did it and doesn't even talk to the guy that uploaded it, that tells me that he never, ever has any intention of really trying to get to the truth. And how would the average American ever find out from Russians in Russia that are never coming here, that will never be questioned, when he can go to the embassy, Ecuadorian embassy in Great Britain, and actually talk to the guy that would know, the only one person on earth that 100% would know? All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. A friend of mine writing about Jane Mayer, left-wing radical, understood. And some others wrote the hit piece years ago on Justice Thomas. I know who I'm dealing with. And look, I'm not the biggest fan of The New Yorker either here. But while Mayer is agnostic on the golden shower allegations, she goes out of her way to editorialize that Steele's inside job report was off the wall and described the notion of the Democratic Party involvement in the hack as far-fetched and unsubstantiated, adding that, quote, it's hard to imagine that it will ever be substantiated. But I don't believe that at all. You know, one of the great things about everything that is cyber, I mean, there's good, there's bad, and there's ugly. But there are, you know, we're able to find out was the information from the DNC. Remember, Julian Assange is the one that revealed this in the summer of 2016. Now, the question is, where did he get the information from? Now, if Mueller's going to suggest that these are some anonymous Russians that we're never going to be able to talk to, and yet he's not going to look at the forensics that the cyber forensics that Julian Assange has, that tells me that that's not verifiable. Show us where the IP addresses are. Show us where the information came from. You know, was it a thumb drive that could have been handed off to somebody and then the thumb drive uploaded to somebody else and put in that way? You know, but it's frankly dereliction of duty that somebody that's supposedly trying to get to the truth of Trump-Russia collusion and where did these emails come from the DNC, where did the hack begin, and where did all this information come from that Julian Assange uploaded? And it seems to me that you got to talk to Julian Assange, at least make an attempt to see if he's willing to provide the source of information, especially since he is claiming adamantly that it never was Russia and was never any state. Now, some of you may say, well, I don't like what WikiLeaks has done. Okay, that has nothing to do with my argument. You can like, dislike, doesn't matter. There's one truth that you can't ignore, though, and that WikiLeaks has never been proven wrong in 11 years. Julian Assange has not been proven wrong in 11 years. Now, compare that to fake news CNN and ABC and NBC and CBS and all these, the New York Times and the Washington Post, they're almost daily they're proven wrong. So he has the information. He knows where he got the information from. And even the dossier that they want to use in every other regard of Christopher Steele, well, Steele is suggesting that it was an inside job, meaning from within the DNC. Now, if everybody loves Christopher Steele so much and the information he's providing, then you have to ask him, except when it doesn't work in your favor, then all of a sudden you're going to question Christopher Steele. Because the Steele, you know, when he filed the memo back in July of 2016, you know, at the time claiming, remember, that the DNC emails, et cetera, that the Kremlin was behind the hacking, which was part of the Russian cyber war against Hillary's campaign, you know, Steele's sources claim that the digital attack involved agents within the DNC, the Democratic Party structure itself, as well as Russians in the U.S. and associated offensive cyber operators. I just got it. Maybe it's both. Maybe Julian has two sources. I don't know. But he's saying that the source or the original source wasn't Russia. And he's pretty emphatic about it. What else do we have? Eric Holder was all over TV, and he's now predicting that Mueller will indict Trump for obstruction. Isn't it great to have a guy that was the worst attorney general in history now lecturing everybody about what's being done here? Anyway, he said President Trump will face an obstruction of justice charge from the special counsel, according to Eric Holder. You technically have an obstruction of justice case that already exists, he said. And I've known Bob Mueller 20, 30 years. My guess is he's trying to make the case as good as he possibly can. So I think we have to be patient in that regard. Now, renowned Harvard law professor Alan Dershowitz has pointed this out before. You can't charge a president with obstruction of justice for exercising his constitutional power to fire Comey and his constitutional authority to tell the Justice Department who to investigate and who not to investigate. He said that's what Thomas Jefferson did. That's what Lincoln did. That's what Roosevelt did. We have precedents that clearly establish that. So who are we going to believe? Alan Dershowitz or the guy that was held in contempt of Congress for lying about the Fast and Furious scandal? I think I'll go with Alan Dershowitz on this one. Because Dershowitz, look, he's talking about how we're now criminalizing political differences here. Holder also pushing in a conspiracy theory that it strikes me that Russia has something on Trump. Okay, what is it? Everybody's been looking for it. Money has been thrown around everywhere. But to see all of these Obama people out in the way that they're out, and by the way, add to my list of people that we need to subpoena for their emails, their texts, and their phone records, add James Clapper and Brennan to the list, and add Eric Holder to the list, you know, because you have Eric Holder's on with Bill Maher, and then you've got Brennan, who's, you know, all over MSNBC every day, and then Clapper, who's all over CNN every day. And I'd like to know what all of them knew and when they knew it. And if Mueller's going to subpoena all the communications, emails, texts, handwritten notes of people associated with Trump, then we've got to start with Clinton and Bill and Hillary themselves. And then we can move right to James Comey. And then we can move right to Brennan and Clapper. And then we can go to Susan Rice. And then we can go to Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr and Obama himself and Samantha Powers and Ben Rhodes and Andrew McCabe and Loretta Lynch. We can go to, and Mueller himself needs to hand over what he has and Sally Yates and Sid Blumenthal. You know, we should get all of these guys in that place. It seems what's fascinating, too, is that the person that Mueller is relying on is happens to be a friend of Comey and Obama's. This is a company called CrowdStrike. And everybody seems to be believing that Mueller is relying on CrowdStrike as his source for saying that, oh, the Russians, they're the ones that hacked the DNC and got the DNC emails, the Podesta emails. Okay, so the president of CrowdStrike is a guy by the name of Sean Henry. And he is the president of their services and CSO and retired executive assistant director of the FBI. Oh, he's buddies with everybody. You know, he served the three FBI field offices, three separate ones at the Bureau's headquarters, and is credited with boosting the FBI's computer crime and cybersecurity investigative capabilities. He oversaw computer crime investigations spanning the globe, including denial of service attacks, bank and corporate breaches, state-sponsored intrusions, and he posted FBI cyber experts and police agencies around the world, including the Netherlands, Romania, Ukraine, Estonia, and he has, you know, been all over TV himself. Now, what we know about Sean Henry is that according to his LinkedIn page, he's a graduate of Hofstra University in Long Island. Anyway, in December 1987, he joined the FBI, was executive assistant director, and for 24 years, he focused on cyber investigations worldwide, and he also worked with the FBI International Operations Response Incident. Now he's the CEO of the cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike. Now, nobody has ever been able to publicly verify any of this information, and all of it ignores the one person that would actually know. And to me, that shows that the fix is in. They've got their predetermined narrative like they've had from the beginning. And with their predetermined narrative, they're never going to ask the one person in the world that would know where those emails came from. I'd like to know. Anyway, CrowdStrike, you know, began working for the Democratic National Committee. They released a report tying Russian hacking to an incident that never happened. Yet even after the report had been debunked, the FBI director Comey was still referring to CrowdStrike as a highly respected private company at a Senate hearing. Anyway, executives from CrowdStrike and director Comey, they were scheduled to testify. This is going back now to March of 2017 by issuing a still unrestricted report about an incident that never happened and then tying the alleged Russian hacks that Democrats claim tipped the elections to Trump. But the DNC employed CrowdStrike credibility deserves to be called into question, despite excellent reporting by cybersecurity expert Jeffrey Carr and some other people. The media has ignored the story and continues to cite CrowdStrike's work. Well, now if it's debunked, why would Robert Mueller apparently be using this information that had been debunked? That's going to be quick to fix. And more troubling than that is the media malfeasance about the discredited CrowdStrike report. In testimony in front of the Senate Intel Committee January 10th that year, 4 days after the Ukrainian Department of Defense denied CrowdStrike's report, Comey admitted that the FBI had denied access to the DNC servers and was praising CrowdStrike without mentioning that they work for the DNC or that their report had been debunked. Oh, let's do this. They want to pull the pin, basically, on Russian hacking. Not one U.S. senator, not one, asked the FBI director to account for the, you know, fact that the source of the explosive determination that Russia hacked the DNC computer system is a DNC contractor and not the FBI. Not one senator asked why Comey's FBI deferred to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's DNC. Remember, the DNC refused to permit FBI forensic specialists to examine the DNC computer system. Why was the FBI never able to examine John Podesta's personal devices? Not one member of the Senate Intel Committee inquired as to why the DNC servers have not, after all this time, been reexamined by the FBI and whether or not it's just possible that the same DNC contractor putting forward the DNC Russian hacking charge might have destroyed the DNC computer system. I mean, none of this makes any sense. You know, there's a lot to this. So much that we're getting to over time, and it's going to all come clear as the days go by. It really is. All right, 800-941-SEAN is a toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Well, one bit of good news for the president is now he's up to 50% in the Rasmussen poll, and he's 48% in the Zogby poll. His number with younger Americans is going up pretty significantly. Millennials is going up. He got a 50% approval rating with them, as opposed to voters age 65 and up, where he came in at 44%. One of the things I'm putting forward as a theory, you know, people are now getting used to Donald Trump. They really are. He sent out a crazy tweet. Oh, well. Yeah, well, he's fighting back. He always was a disruptor. And some people, I think, thought he'd become president and not be a disruptor. He was an iconoclastic candidate, and some people think he's going to be, you know, milquetoast as a president. And everybody expects, well, he's just going to fall in line and he's going to get used to it and he's going to become the same as every other president that we've had. That's not going to happen either. He's not going to change. He's not going to stop fighting. And as a result, Oh, great bit of news. U.S. is going to be the world's largest oil producer by 2023. That's pretty good news. I know a lot of people are upset about the tariff issue. I have a whole different take on it. I don't even think he means it. I think he's negotiating. You're saying he's lying. No, I'm saying he's negotiating. And there's a big difference. He sees these massive trade deficits, and he's saying, okay, we can do better, and we want more access to their markets. And I'll give you an example. Some places like Japan and China, you try and sell U.S. products there. What do you think they're doing to U.S. companies? They're putting massive tariffs, massive obstacles in their way. So it's, I believe, in free and fair trade. But I'm not a protectionist in any way, and I don't think the president is. But I think everything the president says and does, especially publicly, he knows what he's doing. And he's negotiating publicly and warning these countries, yeah, there's going to be some consequences to this. One last point. The 10 questions about the Trump, about the Steele dossier, the answers are coming. They came in Friday. It just hasn't been released yet. And we're still waiting. We have, what, the March 8th. What's today's date? The 5th? In 3 days, we have to have the Department of Justice and the FBI answer Devin Nunes's questions, just like there was a midnight Friday deadline for the Obama officials. But they got to answer questions. Did they violate protocol as it pertains to getting the warrant on Carter Page? And we know the answer is no, they didn't. Because they're supposed to independently verify and corroborate. They didn't do it. They didn't do any of the things that they're supposed to do. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show news, information you won't get elsewhere. By the way, Sam Nunberg is, well, he was apparently, you know, subpoenaed by Mueller, and he's basically saying he can pound sand. He said that he was refusing the special counsel because what they sent me was ridiculous. Oh, did you hear about Trump Tower, Moscow? Did you ever hear Russian spoken in Trump Tower? Why should I have to spend 50 hours going over all this for no reason?
Do you expect accountability in this case?
I do. I expect the inspector general to issue a fact-centric, fair report. Look at what he's already found. He found the Strzok and Page text. Nobody else found that. So I think that he is uniquely well suited to tell us all what happened in 2016. We already know that the FBI and the Department of Justice handled this case differently. We already know that Jim Comey had an unprecedented press conference where he usurped a decision away from the Department of Justice. I've never seen that before. In this particular fact pattern, I think Attorney General Sessions is right that the Department of Justice itself should not be conducting this investigation. Also, think the president's right from this limited standpoint. I don't think the inspector general himself can answer all of our questions. Some of these witnesses have already left the department, which means the inspector general does not have jurisdiction. And there are other agencies like the State Department where Michael Horowitz at DOJ has no jurisdiction whatsoever. Maria, over the weekend, I've counted up almost 24 witnesses that the inspector general would not have access to were he alone conducting this investigation. So I think we're trending perhaps towards another special counsel because of this unique fact pattern and the fact that there are witnesses outside the reach of the inspector general.
So we should have then, you believe, another special counsel to investigate these matters. How does one investigate itself, frankly?
Well, you don't. I wish that I had been able to grade my own papers in college and law school, but I was not able to. I would have done better, first of all. But we don't put family members on the jury. We don't put friends on the jury. You need an independent arbiter, and the Department of Justice cannot investigate itself. Horowitz can. That Horowitz is a fair guy, but when there are 24 witnesses that have left the department or work for another agency, someone else has to do it. Yeah. And I am reluctant to call for special counsel, but I think it may be unavoidable in this fact pattern.
And Mr. Chairman, you were in the middle of a thought about that footnote. Was it the footnote in the Democratic rebuttal?
It was. But, you know, Maria, this Democrat memo, it makes me smile. If it were Adam Schiff, if it were up to him, it would have been a haiku and not a memo, because he did everything he could to keep us from finding out any of the information that was in either one of those memos. So,
All right, that was Trey Gowdy. He was on with Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business earlier this morning saying, all right, so we're expecting the IG report, could be any day, any week now, and he believes it's going to be a thorough and fact-centric investigation. He has counted himself, Gowdy, 24 witnesses the inspector general wouldn't have access to if he conducted the investigation alone, why we need a special counsel, which nobody really wants, because look at what's happening with Robert Mueller. I mean, now Robert Mueller is focused on an advisor to the United Arab Emirates, which now has gone from Russia to, you know, now we're in the United Arab Emirates. Now we'll go back to the Ukraine from 20 years ago. There's seemingly no end to the depth and lengths of which Robert Mueller won't go here. And then Mueller subpoenaing, let's see, he wants everybody's emails, attacks, handwritten notes, Carter Page, Corey Lewandowski, Donald Trump, Hope Hicks, Keith Schiller, the former bodyguard of Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, Roger Stone, and Steve Bannon. Well, I got a lot of people like on my list, Bruce and Nellie Orr. I think we ought to subpoena everything that they've got. Strzok and Page ought to be subpoenaed. Susan Rice ought to be subpoenaed. Definitely James Comey. Let's get his emails and let's get all of his text messages. We have to get him for Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, because they're up to their eyeballs and violating many laws. That would also include Obama. Now we know that Devin Nunes did get answers. We'll have those answers tonight at 9 when we're on Hannity to the deadline that he had Friday night from Obama administration officials. I think we have Samantha Powers has a lot of questions to answer. Ben Rhodes and Andrew McCabe and Loretta Lynch and even Mueller himself, because he was the FBI director during the time the whole Uranium One Russia deal took place. And he knew about these crimes being committed and he did nothing. Oh, did I mention Jeannie Ray? She, too. And, George Papadopoulos. Let's bring him in. Andrew Weissman needs to be brought in. And we could just go on from there. Rebicki, we can bring Rebicki into, you know, let's subpoena all of his emails. As long as we're going through all these emails, Cody Shearer, let's bring his in. Let's bring in Rosenstein and Baker. And let's get their emails and text messages. Anyway, what's good for the goose here ought to be good for the gander, especially if we're actually looking for truth and trying to get to see who committed crimes, what crimes, and when. But I think a second special counsel is now unavoidable in this particular case. And, you know, as Gowdy said, over the weekend, I counted up to 24 witnesses the inspector general would not have access to. So we got to have somebody that's going to have access to this. Anyway, joining us now, investigative reporter, Fox News contributor Sarah Carter is with us. Now we're in the Emirates, and now we're subpoenaing everything, but only on one side of what the investigation ought to be about. Your take.
Yes, Sean, and when you see how far they've gone beyond their mandate, it kind of makes you question how will another special counsel operate. But you're right. Right now, looking at how the inspector general is going to be handling an investigation into this, and according to Trey Gowdy, according to other congressional members that I've spoken with, there's just no other way around it. If we're going to go into an investigation, they're going to need access to these witnesses, and that's true. The inspector general won't have access to all of these witnesses. It's going to be very difficult for him. I might add on that list Sally Yates, Cody Shearer, Sidney Blumenthal. I mean, this is a long list of people that need to be talked to, that we need to have access to their records. We need to know what the communications was like just in between Sidney Blumenthal and Christopher Steele. We need to find out what was going on with this dossier. And right now, according to everyone that I've spoken with, minus the sources that I have at the Department of Justice, they are calling for a special counsel. Now, the Department of Justice will argue differently. They'll say, look, we can do this. The inspector general has the authority to do this. And now that we're expecting the inspector general's report within the next week or so, it'll be interesting to see if anybody
is it going to be in the next week or so. Will we get it that soon? Finally,
I absolutely believe that we'll see it before the first week of April. Now, things can change, but that's what I've been told by a number of sources as well. It could be any time. Now, remember, he's been working on this since last year, since January of last year. So Horowitz has had a full year, thousands and thousands, if not millions, of documents to go through. And it is true, Gowdy brought up a very important point, that the inspector general was the one that discovered those text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page that certainly – opened up a whole new realm into this investigation. It pointed out Andrew McCabe. And look, Andrew McCabe is gone now. He is still currently being investigated. And it would not surprise me. We know we've seen the reports that have come out that said, you know, McCabe has been accused of leaking. He's also been accused of not being forthright with the inspector general. I believe McCabe has a lot more on his plate than what we've been told. It'll be interesting to see if there'll be any criminal referrals from Horowitz based on that inspector general's report. So if there is, I think that may play into the hands of the Justice Department's argument that they can handle this kind of case. There's also something that a lot of people aren't looking at. With a letter from Stephen Boyd that was sent out last year, and he's an assistant deputy attorney general, where he specifically spoke about prosecutors that were assigned to the case. And now a lot of people have forgotten this. Remember, beyond the inspector general's investigation, there are also prosecutors that have been assigned to the case by Attorney General Jeff Sessions to look into issues such as the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, Uranium One. So what have they been discovering? We really don't know, because remember, grand juries and these type of investigations are conducted with such secrecy. Now, not Mueller's necessarily. We've seen a lot of leaks.
No, we almost see a leak a day. Let me ask you this. Look, this Jane Mayer is hardly a conservative, and she writes in The New Yorker, and it's a long piece out by her. She's a longtime left-wing reporter, which she's arguing that the Steele dossier is mostly credible, and that's why the FBI took it seriously. I mean, but just the opposite has turned out to be true here. Now, if Democrats are going to claim, and we had reports over the weekend that Mueller, you know, is looking to indict Russians in terms of people being guilty of getting into the DNC emails and hacking into all of this. What gets pretty interesting about that, it turns out that on July 26, 2016, after WikiLeaks disseminated the DNC emails, Steele filed yet another memo, this time claiming that the Kremlin was behind the hacking, which was part of a Russian cyber war against Hillary Clinton's campaign, and many of the details seem far-fetched. And Steele's sources claim that the digital attack involved agents within the Democratic Party structure itself. Now, that might, you know, because it's interesting, the one guy that they don't ever talk to is the one guy that would have the absolute answer. And that is...
Yeah, you're right. He's the one guy. You would think that people would be flying over there just to interview him.
Well, I did, and let me play what I got out of him.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So, in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
And then he went on to say it's no state at all. Now, he's not been questioned by anybody. My sources have told me that WikiLeaks, now, like him or hate him, it doesn't matter. They have an 11-year track record of not being proven wrong.
You're absolutely right. And look, our intelligence community interviews terrorists. Right? Mm-hmm. They'll go to interview a terrorist to gather information. They will talk to people that they don't like in other countries, enemy states. So why doesn't anyone just talk with Julian Assange? Why can't they work out some kind of a deal so they can interview him and find out what he knows? Even more interestingly, Sean, is that the FBI itself relied on CrowdStrike for this information. They didn't go ahead and do this on their own. They didn't investigate this on their own. They relied on an outside source to get that information. And I think that's very important.
Well, explain. I got to take a break. We'll come back. Investigative reporter and Fox News contributor Sarah Carter. And on the other side, we'll get to a lot more of your phone calls as well. Cheryl Atkinson coming up on our News Roundup Information Overload Hour. As we continue with Sarah Carter, investigative reporter, and explain who is CrowdStrike, because all they have are Democratic fingerprints on them, and also what they've been saying has been discredited, hasn't it?
Yeah, to a large sense, it would have to be. It's almost like they're opted out, right? Because CrowdStrike is a private company, private security company. They handle all kinds of issues related to server systems and hacking and things of that nature. But if you just look at the CrowdStrike list, and I wish I could remember all the names off the top of my head, but I've talked to former FBI agents. Look, CrowdStrike hires from the FBI. So a lot of the people that are there in senior level positions are very close friends with Comey, are very close friends with Andrew McCabe, and, you know, and they're getting jobs from them. So let's just put it this way. If you're an FBI agent, you getting ready to retire, and you want to move on to a really great company that's going to pay you a lot more than you were probably making in the bureau, you go to CrowdStrike.
Well, you have, but what do you know about this guy, Henry? He's a former FBI executive assistant. He's the president of CrowdStrike. And by the way, he worked under, his time at the FBI was under Comey and Obama.
Absolutely. And he's very close friends. What I know is he's very close friends with Director Comey, former FBI Director Comey, very close friends, Sean Henry, with McCabe. So how can we, honestly, I'm not saying, and we don't have any information to prove that they were wrong, but how can we honestly say that this was an objective investigation? When now we've seen the facts. We've seen the facts laid before us. We've seen what Andrew McCabe has done. We've seen what he's been involved in. We're seeing this, possibly this scathing report that points him out in an Inspector General Michael Horowitz report, which is supposed to be coming out. And now we're supposed to say, okay, we accept Sean Henry's CrowdStrike report that was handed over to the FBI. I don't think I've ever heard of this, and I've asked a number of FBI agents who've been involved in counterintelligence investigations and criminal investigations, and they have said over and over again, look, why didn't we conduct our own investigation? That's what we're supposed to do. We're not just supposed to accept what CrowdStrike says. We have to open our own, look at our own data, trace it, figure it out.
But there's got to be – but there's got to be – direct evidence of where it came from to WikiLeaks. So we the source is there. There's got to be evidence of where did it come from and how did he load it? And that's the information. Now, there's also, you know, issues involved in terms of the speed and capacity with which information can be transferred. And what I am being told is that the method that they're suggesting in which they could transfer such high volumes of information like the ones that came from the DNC, well, it could be done a lot quicker with a stick than over, you know, some type of computer system. Is that true?
That is true, and that's what I've been told, too. I mean, this is the reason why in any very secure environment, for example, in the government, you will never be able to walk into a high-level or classified division of the government with your, you know, with the stick or with anything that could download documents or equipment quickly, because that's what people do, right? That's what spies do. And that's what people who are working within the government would try to do to walk out with information. But there are ways to do it. I mean, we've seen people in the past that have done this. So why not just go to the source? Why not go to Julian Assange, ask him those questions? I mean, he's been pretty much held hostage at the embassy for more than 5 years now. I mean, is it 6 years now? And nobody has gone and spoken with him from our government. I mean, that's incredible to me that they have not gone that far to just say, hey, look, we want to interview you. Let us come into the embassy. Let us interview you. Let's figure this out or figure out a way to do this where maybe he signed some type of documentation. I'm going to give you all the information. They've done it in the past with worse people. You know, if they're considering Julian Assange an enemy of the state, I mean, they've done this before.
Okay, so but you know what? Computer forensics don't lie. And if Julian can provide them the forensics that prove where the emails came from, then case is closed. Then we'll know the answer. I got to let you go here. Sarah Carter, we'll have more with you tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel, 800-941-SEAN.
It's the 90th Annual Academy Awards, beaming to you live in stunning black and white from the historic Dolby Theater, just a hop and a skip away from Hooters, where all the savvy stars mingle and mix. And here we go, as they begin to arrive, it's a veritable Hollywood who's who, Chadwick Boseman, the king of Wakanda. Imagine, a country with a black leader. Wouldn't that be swell? Now it's time to go inside, where tonight's godless Hollywood elitists are on the edge of their seats. And wow, the stunning Lupita Nyong'o. She was born in Mexico and raised in Kenya. Let the tweet storm from the president's toilet begin.
These are the 90th Academy Awards. This is history happening right here. Oscar is 90 years old tonight, which means he's probably at home right now watching Fox News. course, no. Oscar is here with us. Oscar is the most beloved and respected man in Hollywood. And there's a very good reason why. Just look at him. Keeps his hands where you can see them. Never says a rude word. And most importantly, no penis at all. He is literally a statue of limitations. And that's the kind of men we need more of in this town. Timothy is the star of a small but powerful story called Call Me By Your Name, which did not make a lot of money. In fact, of the 9 Best Picture nominees, only 2 of them made more than $100 million. But that's not the point. We don't make films like Call Me By Your Name for money. We make them to upset Mike Pence. Over the course of this evening, I hope you will listen to many brave and outspoken supporters of movements like Me Too and Time's Up and Never Again, because what they're doing is important. Things are changing for the better. They're making sure of that. It is positive change. This is a night for positivity, and our plan is to shine a light on a group of outstanding and inspiring films, each and every one of which got crushed by Black Panther this weekend. The success of Black Panther is one of many positive stories this year, especially for African Americans and Bob Iger. So if you do win an Oscar tonight, we want you to give a speech and we want you to say whatever you feel needs to be said. Speak from the heart. We want passion. You have an opportunity and a platform to remind millions of people about important things like equal rights and equal treatment. If you want to encourage others to join the amazing students at Parkland at their march on the 24th, do that. If the last 2 years have taught us anything, it's that reality can be depressing. But tonight's nominated documentary show us that where there is darkness, there's also hope, except at the White House. Hope quit on Wednesday.
Thank you all for making films like Icarus possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, now at least we know Putin didn't rig this competition, right?
All right, that was the Oscars from last night, down 16% from an already low last year. I just don't think they get, people don't want their politics nor their hypocrisy on stage. You know, earlier in the evening, Kobe Bryant, remember, he was charged in a case against a woman, and then it ended up, there's a $5 million settlement, according to TMZ I was reading today, and they're out there, they're trashing Trump and Pence and Fox News. I'm like, it wasn't even funny. That's the worst part. None of it was funny. And everyone gets so serious, and he walks over. Oh, we've got the perfect example of a man. And, yeah, he has no penis. Okay. And he's not real, as Oscar. Anyway, so a lot of political jokes in all of this. All of the Me Too, Time's Up, anti-gun all came up all throughout the evening. You know what the problem is? I was watching the early shows. Well, actually watching E! Network, and because they actually had pictures. I mean, it takes them hours to get all these people in and their big, you know, limousines or whatever they're being driven up in. But you watch, there were 500 armed police officers at least just from one department there. And now we're not even talking about private security guards, private security that the Oscars has. I mean, it certainly wasn't a gun-free zone there. And yet we have armed people all over the Oscars. But we can't have, let's see, concealed carry, retired police, military inside of America's schools protecting our kids. Why don't we just protect them as well as we protect our actors and actresses and our artists? How about we protect the kids the same way? I'll give you another example. I mentioned Kobe Bryant. What about this is the same movement in Hollywood that, you know, went absolutely nuts years ago when Roman Polanski had to leave America because he was involved in the rape, drugging, plying this young girl with alcohol and quaaludes, and ended up raping the girl. Sometimes later, apologized for being a rapist. He can't come back to America. He should be extradited and put on trial. But yet, when he won the award, here's Hollywood reacting to their pedophile friend.
And the Oscar goes to Roman Polanski for The Pianist.
one of the loudest applauses I've ever heard, straight out of Hollywood, for a guy that is an admitted, because he apologized, child rapist. Somebody gave drugs and alcohol to a 13-year-old girl. I mean, really? Now we're supposed to listen to speeches about Me Too and Time's Up from the same Hollywood that supported this guy? And then we're supposed to listen to speeches about guns from the same people that have armed guards all over the place. You got to watch the video. I'll show some footage tonight about how many cops with weapons were there on the red carpet.
But I think one point you're missing, or maybe you're going to get to it, and I've interrupted you rudely. I apologize.
And but another hypocrisy is on the private jets. Almost all those people have flown in private jets, and then they lecture us about our caravans.
What I was going to say was all of these people who are out there yelling about guns are featured in movies glorifying guns. They're holding guns. They're shooting guns.
Guns, violence, and sex? You mean that's in the movies?
All the things that they say they're so against. And that's what they portray, and they get paid all this money for. So they're spreading the message to our youth that they don't want.
Look, they're just phony, overpaid, over-glorified hypocrites. You know, where is the... I just have never understood this fascination, if you happen to be on the big screen or in movies or on television. Why is there a fascination that somehow you deserve 5,000 award ceremonies a year? I've never seen anything like it.
But also, I think it's disgusting now how we're just emasculating men and we're telling men they don't matter and we want to take them out of the picture. It's one thing to want equality. It's another thing to cast them. I mean, I have a son, and I'm afraid of the world that I'm bringing him into as all these people are saying how much they hate men. You know, you need to love men. You need to love women. We need to love one another.
Okay, now that we got that speech out of the way.
You're welcome.
All we need is love. We'll start saying, they're hypocrites on guns. They have more gun security than any kid in school. They're hypocrites on Me Too, Time's Up, as they worship the guy named Roman Polanski. Where is the petition to get Polanski extradited back to the United States? They're hypocrites on all of this stuff, especially, the environment. And they all travel on their little private jets everywhere. The only people, Ed Begley and what was that girl, Daryl Hannah, are the only two that, you know, never lived that life. But they said they were environmentalists, but they live like environmentalists. And, you know, you can't lecture the rest of the world about the caravans we drive. Try and put American handcuffs on American companies with this Paris Climate Accord nonsense that nobody else is going to be subjected to. We get the worst standards, pay the most money, and all the other big countries get to pollute away, and we're just a bunch of suckers. Now let's get back to our phones. Michelle is in North Carolina. Hey, Michelle, how are you? Glad you called.
Hey, Sean. Thanks so much for taking my call. You know, I'm with you. I was frustrated the day after the inauguration when we've got actresses standing on a platform outside of Washington, D.C., and, you know, musicians saying that they want to bomb the White House. And they're claiming that there's so much, you know, male dominance in Hollywood. And I thought to myself, first of all, you people don't have a clue. You're making millions. You've got people that do all of your dirty work because all you do is show up to a set. And I thought to myself, what about all the men and women that have been in Hollywood that are trying to make it, that are working three jobs, that are working as waitresses and doing other things, and they're never going to have their name on a kiosk? They're going to be working, you know, to make these other stars look great. I'm sorry, but if you are able to pay your bills and if you are able to put your kids through college and if you are able to make a life for yourself in the United States, they have got more money than they can ever spend, and they have no idea how the rest of the world lives. And the other thing that is
if you've got a bodyguard and you got access to a private jet and you're trying to impose your very liberal, usually ill-informed opinions on push them on the American people, well, then if you want to be so pure, then give it up yourself. Give up your money. Give it to the poor. Give up your jet. You know, let sick people use it and they can get better medical care. Demand that there's no, you know, make the Oscars a gun-free zone. Good luck with them pushing that nonsense. That wouldn't happen ever. And it's hypocrisy on parade every day.
Yes. And you know, the other thing that just kills me is we talk about, oh, we love our kids and we want to protect our kids. Well, I have this question. You know, it's all about gun control. Well, I have this question, Sean. If we love our kids so much, then why don't we take the screens away from them? As far as I know, the depression rate among teens has skyrocketed because of social media, because everybody's comparing themselves with everybody else. If we really love our kids, then why are we allowing abortion up until the 9th month? If we really love our kids, then why are we allowing them to be entertained to death and for them to have taken God out of the schools and for them to have,
look,
you know,
all of this is stuff parents have to deal with. I mean, every parent, look, I never had a problem with PlayStation or Xbox or the games that kids play. And maybe it was because of my upbringing. I mean, I was addicted to pinball and Pac-Man and all of those, you know, Star games. I was addicted to all of it. But I think you're right. I mean, it's what are we allowing our kids to have access to? I think one of the worst things you can do as a parent is put a television in a kid's room. They're never going to do anything but watch TV. You got to limit the amount of TV they watch. You got to make sure that they spend some time reading. You got to make sure that they do their job every day. And, you know, it's not going to be, they're not going to like you because you're making them read and be disciplined and do their job. But that's what life is all about. Nobody gets an easy path in life. Everybody, I don't care how much money you have, where you grow up. Everybody in life has challenges. Everybody. Yes. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. Your call's coming up straight ahead. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, let's get back to our phones. Elizabeth is in Southfield, Michigan. How are you?
Hey, Sean. I hope you realize us average people are not sitting up on Sunday night watching these lunatics. I mean, my husband's not about to buy me a $1 million gown and parade up and down the street and act like I'm all that. We're not watching this nonsense. Ashley Judd and that poem really threw me off. You remember that nasty woman poem? Oh, my God.
Oh, by Ashley Judd. I am a nasty woman. You know, I think about blowing up the White House. Look, I'll tell you what I was waiting for. The Oscars started at 8. I said, all right, let me flip in and see how obnoxious Jimmy Kimmel is and you know, how politically correct it is. It turned out to be right. I was waiting for Homeland to come on at 9.
Oh, that's my show. You know, come on, Sean. You know that these people, we do not care to watch them anymore.
Yeah. Did you watch Homeland last night? It was so good. It was one of their best.
Oh, it was.
So good.
It really is. That's one of my favorite shows. Oh,
For those that have not followed Homeland, the good news is you have some serious binge-watching TV time ahead of you. You're going to love it.
Oh, it's so wonderful, isn't it? But, you know, these Hollywood people, Sean, we do not look up to these fools. We are laughing at them. They are making themselves bigger than what they are. I mean, we're all laughing. Did you see the Dolly Parton interview where she refused to put down our president? At least some people out there have some.
Yeah, listen, there are some good people out in Hollywood. I love, over the years, I've met a few of them, and they whisper. They're like, listen, I watch your show every night. Just don't tell anybody I watch. I love your show. Keep doing what you're doing. But I just don't tell anybody. I'm like, okay.
Make a montage of the Hollywood people and make me sick because I have to drive home and I can't listen to them for an hour. So please don't make a montage of these lunatics. That Ashley Judd poem was about enough for me. Yeah. So please don't
Ashley Judd, I am a nasty woman. All right, I got to go. We'll play this in your honor just to remind people.
And to our detractors that insist that this march will never add up to anything, you. I am a nasty woman. I'm nasty, like my blood stains on my bed sheets. We don't actually choose if and when to have our periods. Believe me, if we could, some of us would.
Her and Madonna, unbelievable. All right, 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload.
Months before we knew that the Justice Department had secretly seized AP phone records and surveilled Fox News' James Rosen, before Director of National Intelligence Director James Clapper incorrectly testified under oath that Americans weren't subject to mass data collection, I was tipped off that the government was likely secretly monitoring me due to my reporting. Three forensics exams confirmed the intrusive long-term remote surveillance. That included keystroke monitoring, password capture, use of Skype to listen into audio and exfiltrate files, and more. Getting to the bottom of it hasn't been easy. It's unclear what, if anything, the FBI has done to investigate. The Justice Department has refused to answer simple, direct, written congressional questions about its knowledge of the case. It has stonewalled my Freedom of Information requests, first saying that it had no responsive documents, then admitting to 2,500 of them, but never providing any of them. In 2013, Reporters Without Borders downgraded America's standing in the global free press rankings, rating the Obama administration as worse than Bush's. It matters not that when caught, the government promises to dial back or that James Rosen gets an apology. The message has already been received. If you cross this administration with perfectly accurate reporting they don't like, you will be attacked and punished. You and your sources may be subjected to the kind of surveillance devised for enemies of the state.
And my forensics team noticed something strange about this Apple desktop. The hard drive inside is a different hard drive than the one we turned over to the Inspector General. How do we know this? Well, we had already done our own forensics exam, of course. We had reported the serial number. We know the serial number of the device that we handed over to the Inspector General, and we know now that the one in that computer has an entirely different serial number on it and is an entirely different device.
All right, News Roundup and Information Overload Hour here on the Sean Hannity Show. That is Cheryl Atkinson. She is the host of Full Measure on Sundays, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Smear and Stonewalled. And she joins us today. All right, that's Cheryl. You're describing here how your computers were hacked and monitored by the government, and that beyond that, your hard drive was actually replaced as you were trying to get to the bottom of all of this. In other words, we don't have Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable search and seizure. How is it possible the government hacked and monitored your computers and then replaced the hard drive?
It's pretty extraordinary. The replacement of the hard drive, you know, it's a little confusing because there were so many devices the government infiltrated that I was using. But this happened to an Apple desktop that was my personal desktop, not the CBS devices that we've talked about before, but my personal desktop that I actually gave to the Department of Justice Inspector General when I filed a complaint against the government asking them to investigate the alleged misbehavior.
Did this go, I'm not to interrupt you, this went to Horowitz?
Yes.
Okay. Did he seem sympathetic to what had happened to you?
Well, I never spoke to Horowitz directly, but his investigators, this was back in 2013, 2014, were seemed very sympathetic, very factual. They came to my house on numerous occasions. They found a lot of suspicious activity in this Apple desktop. But we already had our own forensics. They weren't able to really do as deep an analysis as we had done, but we gave it to them just in case they could find out more. But about halfway into this investigation, something happened, and they changed the scope of the investigation. They would never release the final report to me to this day. They wouldn't give me the notes. A lot of suspicious things in my mind happened, but they had returned that desktop. Well, we're now reexamining all my devices in light of discovery things we found and new tools in my current federal lawsuit over all this. And the forensics team discovered that that Apple that I had given to the IG has a different serial number on it now, as does the hard drive inside, which we would never have known if we hadn't gone back in.
When this started out, you were working for CBS. You were reporting on the Benghazi scandal, and CBS at the time hired a cybersecurity firm on your behalf, and they had determined through forensic analysis, and by the way, there's a lot you can glean from such analysis, that your computer was accessed by an unauthorized external unknown party on multiple occasions at the time that you were doing your investigative work. Now, have we been able to pinpoint 100% who these people were hacking into your computers?
Only the 100% nature that it was the federal government. But no, we don't know the names, and that's what we hope to find with the lawsuit. And by the way, this predated, it was happening during Benghazi, and that's when I discovered it shortly thereafter. But we were able to forensically show that these intrusions were happening as far back as 2011. This was a long-term effort. And, you know, in our lawsuit, we want to know the names of those responsible. I mean, really, based on what we've already shown and what the government has acknowledged or knows, there should be a criminal investigation into who is responsible. But that would have to be done by the people who may be accused. And that's probably not going to happen. So we have this civil lawsuit that's been going on, and we've survived every attempt so far by the Department of Justice to kill it. So here we are moving forward.
In your memoir, you recalled that there was a source connected to a government agency implicated, you know, a sophisticated entity that actually used commercial and non-attributable spyware that's proprietary to our government. You know, a government agency like the CIA, the FBI, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency. So in other words, it would seem they're the only ones that have the programs and the powerful tools of intelligence that would make such a breach possible, right?
Well, yes, and we've had probably about six different forensics exams over the course of time done by different teams that are all working on this case, and they've been able to get a lot more. They know how our data was transferred, for example, the bulk data to, you know, an Ashburn farm, data farm, and then to Quantico. They know how a BGAN satellite terminal, for example, all these technical things I don't fully understand, but were used to come into my computer and refresh and continue with this, you know, individual targeting. They call it a zero-day attack. And we have just kind of endless forensics that continue to help us drill down into more specifics, but those will not tell us the name of who ordered it. And, you know, that's what we'd like to get, the names of the people who are behind it.
You know, it's interesting because we're watching almost daily now Mueller and his merry band of Obama and Clinton and DNC donors, you know, going so far beyond what their mandate ever was in the special counsel investigation. Now we're finding out that Mueller's focusing on the Emirates as part of a broader investigation. In the case of Manafort, well, that goes back to the Ukraine long before Paul Manafort was ever a part of the Trump team. So far, there's been no evidence of any Trump-Russia collusion. We do have evidence of Hillary Clinton paying for Russian lies to influence the American people. That has now been ascertained to be fact. And we know that the lies she paid for was then used by a FISA court to obtain a warrant against Carter Page, Trump campaign associate, and all the emails, text messages, phone calls that go back, I assume, in perpetuity. And as part of that application, they never told the FISA judges, both in the initial application, three subsequent renewals, that, in fact, the person that was responsible for the information that became the bulk of that warrant application was Hillary Clinton and the DNC. I mean, that's outright lying to the FISA court judges. Nobody seems to have, you know, any desire to get to the bottom of that truth, which tells me the entire investigation is a fraud.
Well, and I would step back and, as I often do, look at even the bigger picture. I have intelligence sources that have told me, and there's evidence for this in the public record, that this certainly isn't the first or only time that intelligence officials have allegedly provided misinformation or false information to the secret FISA court. We just don't normally know about it because it's normally not going to be in the public domain. But that's the reason that some rules were changed and amended in recent years that may not have been followed in this case. But this is, I think, a bigger problem that deserves examination, but I just don't think we're going to get it because it requires the insiders to examine themselves and to expose what they themselves were doing. And that's kind of where we're all caught now.
What do you mean? Are you saying that this, our intelligence communities and the DOJ and the FBI, are you suggesting that they lie regularly and that they would withhold crucial information to a FISA judge? Because those are felonies if they're doing that. In this case, they just got caught. And I'm frankly stunned that we haven't heard from one of these four judges, either the judge involved in the initial application or the subsequent renewal applications, because they were all lied to.
Let me tell you two things that we know for sure. We know that under Robert Mueller as FBI director, the FBI changed some procedures to tighten them up, called Woods procedures, and it was stated in the record that was because so much wrong information, I won't say lies, it could have been mistakes, but so much wrong information had gone to the FISA court in the past. They were trying to help correct that. And then number two, I will tell you that I have a source directly involved in this sort of thing in the past who told me some time ago, and this was confirmed by a second source for me, that it's not out of the ordinary. It's not extremely rare that disinformation or wrong information is presented to the court. Now, you can call it a lie. I termed it a mistake when I wrote about it once, and the intel official said to me later.
Does this sound like a mistake not to tell the FISA judge to have a footnote that says it may be political in nature when in reality everybody knew that Hillary bought and paid for the dossier? And by the way, one other little detail is they never told the judge or any of these judges that none of this had been verified, none of it. And 3 months later, just to make my point, we know that James Comey went to Trump Tower. This is in January before the inauguration in 2017. And he said to the president-elect, yeah, this dossier exists. It's salacious and it's unverified. But that's not what they told the judge back in October when they got the FISA warrant.
Well, to your point, this intelligence official, when I was trying to be give benefit of the doubt and term it as a mistake, if FISA court's not always been given the correct information, this intelligence person connected with me afterwards and said, not always a mistake, Cheryl. And I said, well, I'm just trying to be, you know, take the most careful approach when I talk about it.
But this doesn't. But wait a minute. If you're not going to tell if Glenn Simpson never verified it, we know that. Now, we went over the rules that the FBI was supposed to follow. And this was part of Devin Nunes's letter on Thursday of last week. Protocols are supposed to be followed. And they're supposed to be independent verification and corroboration. None of those two things happen. Matter of fact, we now, you know, most of that dossier has been debunked, especially the more salacious aspects of it. But they got a whole year's worth of surveillance out of this lie.
Well, and again, two intelligence sources that I have dealt with after they found out how the dossier was used to the FISA court, both of them unsolicited used the phrase criminal to me. And these are, you know, insiders. They're not critical of their colleagues, you know, capriciously, but they think this is not how things are supposed to be done. And those are insiders I trust saying so.
That blows my mind. All right. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll come back. We'll continue. Also, your calls coming up straight ahead. All right. As we continue, Cheryl Atkinson is with us. And, you know, it's almost hard to believe in America that here she had her computers hacked because of her investigative work at the time with CBS. And now she's discovered that, in fact, her entire hard drive was switched out. You know, I do talk a lot about the deep state. I talk about the powerful tools of intelligence. You know, as you look at your experience and then you kind of see what happened with the FISA abuse that we're now discovering and unverified, uncorroborated information is actually used to get a warrant to spy on an opposition presidential party in an election year. It makes you think that we can't have secret FISA courts anymore, even though for terrorism, it's something that on paper would be a really good idea.
I just think historically, every time we understandably allow new tools for our government to have that maybe strike into our liberties, but with good reason, the pendulum swings too far in the other direction. It's almost, you know, human nature. There are political actors and bad actors involved. You know, at every level, there's a few. So I think all this could and should be examined. I'm just not sure we will, because those who are, again, who are able to do so are the ones who are accused or controlling the situation. I don't think they're going to call for that.
All right, Cheryl Atkinson, we appreciate you sharing your story, and I hope you get to the bottom of it. And if there is justice, somebody's going to owe you a lot of money. That's what I would think.
Thanks for your support, Sean.
You bet. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. Look, if we want to live in a country where we have constitutional protections against unreasonable search and seizure, then we better get to the bottom of all of this spying, the weaponizing of our powerful tools of intelligence. All right, let's get to the phones when we get back. Hannity tonight at 9, beyond the insanity of the Oscars, we also have my list of people that need to hand over their text messages, their emails, people. You know, it's a little different than Robert Mueller's phony list. That's coming up tonight at 9. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. All right, let's get to our busy phones. Many of you have been really patient throughout the day here. And let us say hi to Walt. Is in Pittsburgh. He's in PA. Walt, how are you and what's going on?
Well, Sean, I got to tell you, last week you were talking about meeting women in bars. I've met my wife at a bar in Pittsburgh, and we've been together ever since. This is so going on 14 years marriage.
By the way, no. There's a difference. You're talking about the conversation we had last week, because right. Jason goes to one bar almost every weekend, and it's called Coyote Ugly. Did you ever see the movie Coyote Ugly?
I have, and it's not a bad movie, but like the Jets and the Cleveland Browns, they're both mathematically eliminated from any award show before it even
starts. The only thing is, in this day and age of Me Too and Time Is Up and so on and so forth, it's amazing that the bar has as its signature that women take off their bras and throw them up on the bar. And what do you have, thousands and thousands of them up there, J.C. Ohn?
The ceiling is stocked full of bras.
Stocked full of them. Okay. I don't think it's the prime place I'd go to meet the woman that I want to marry. Put it that way.
Yeah, Sean, I agree. But, you know, it was a matter of running in, you know, having mutual friends.
No, I don't have a problem going to a bar. Is it a nice bar? Is it a bar restaurant? Is it a pub? What is it?
No, it's a...
It's a dive bar? You met in a dive bar?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, dive bar on the south side of Pittsburgh. Almost.
All right, but listen,
accent.
I've had some of the best times of my life at dive bars with my buddies. So, you know, we've hung out and we play pool and, you know, we ping pong and fire some darts. I've done all that. It's fun. You ever go to the Floribama down in Alabama and the... You know, Florida, Georgia, right there at the Florida-Georgia line.
No, but for me, anytime I go anywhere, I always try to find the Steelers bar because, you know, there's pretty much one in every.
Oh, yeah. If you're hanging out in a football bar, I love the new sports bars that exist. Number one, I like all the crappy food, you know, Philly cheesesteaks and hamburgers, wings and. If you get a salad, it's made with real iceberg
lettuce. Yeah, but
you're not
meeting anybody at those bars because everybody is completely distracted. There's too many TVs. There's too much going on.
No, there's not enough TV.
But what if there's someone there?
Like, food and not be annoyed.
If Walt was there, see, the dive bar can't afford all those
screens.
Walt's
not going to be able to pick me up at the bar, if that's what you're suggesting.
Walt does not want to pick you up. He's married already.
Ugh. All right. I don't have a problem with the bar you're describing. I mean, Jason's a little shaky, on shaky ground there. At Coyote Ugly every weekend.
Sean, I got to tell you, though, the bars in Pittsburgh are different than Coyote Ugly. Yeah, you have your hipster bars. You have your mom-and-pop bars, which are still the staple of America. You know, and then you have the, you know, being in Pittsburgh, being the six-time Super Bowl champs, the back-to-back Stanley Cup winners, unlike the Jets that... I looked on the schedule. You got a reprieve again this year that the Jets aren't playing the Steelers. So you got a break this year again.
This is now your third shot at my New York football teams. Listen, you have a franchise quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger is amazing. I'm a big fan of Ben's. And I think the Steelers always have tough football teams. I like them a lot. But with all due respect, you don't win every year. And it's been quite a long dry spell. Until you built this new good team together. So hang in there, and I appreciate it. And I don't have any problem with where you met your wife. All right, James in Texas. What's up, James? How are you?
How's it going?
I'm good, sir. Good.
What I was calling in about is, I was listening to your show last Friday about the opiate epidemic and everything, and I was a veteran, combat veteran, got out of the military. During my time in the military, I worked at NSA, had a top secret clearance, and then the VA starts throwing painkillers at me. And they basically kept me on them for 10, 12 years.
Well, let me ask you this. What was your injury? I mean, did you have...
fractured neck.
Yeah. I'm sure, listen, that's painful. And but they didn't give you the therapy that would have been more of a long-term solution rather than the short-term relief that a pain pill gives you.
Right. I begged for them to do an alternative. I had to go to a private clinic on my own. I'm wanting the VA to open up opiate clinics at every main VA center.
Well, they're supposed to now. Look, the president and his executive order and what he's done with the VA, there are dramatic changes taking place. I don't know if it's reached your area yet, but if you're not getting the help you need, you need to scream bloody murder. Where in Texas are you?
I've been clean for 4 years. I went to a private clinic, paid out of my own pocket.
And you got off. Listen, it's not easy to get off those opioids once you're addicted. What pills were you taking?
Every anything and everything after the VA started me on.
Oxycontin and...
Yeah, Percocet, Oxycontin, hydrocodone.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let me ask this. Was your addiction so bad that you went to the street to get some?
You had to, because the VA would give me $180, $240 a month.
Did you ever go to heroin?
No. That's the one thing I didn't do.
Good for you. That would have killed you.
I was a single parent, and I had a kid that I had to worry about. So, you know, it kept me from going over the edge.
Yep.
But the VA needs to really open up clinics. They're the legal biggest pusher in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Listen, I'm proud of you. It shows your strength. You're right about, and this goes for doctors and, you know, the general, every area of the country. You know, watch this new series on Showtime called Trade. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, it's scary. It shows the production. I mean, you've got a bunch of guys producing black tar heroin, turning it into brown powder. And, you know, it's the most disgusting conditions ever. And nobody knows what they're lacing this crap with. You have no idea. They don't know what they're doing. And that's why so many people are dying. But it all starts, in most cases, with pain pills. And that's Vicodin, Percocet, Oxycontin, hydrocodone, all of those. And it's, you know, people as strong as yourself and doctors and lawyers are getting addicted to this crap. It's ridiculous. And we need to have a better response than what we have. Thanks, James. Tracy in Katy, Texas is a liberal. What's up, liberal Tracy? What's up?
Well, do me a favor. You know, I know you always like to strike the prejudicial position of a person and make them. I'm not a liberal. And please stop trying to.
It says on my. It says on my call screener.
I know.
Liberal.
I didn't tell no one I was ever. I never mentioned that word for me in my name ever.
Okay. Did you vote for Trump?
No.
Did you vote for Hillary?
Yes, I did.
Did you vote for Obama twice?
Yes, I have.
Uh huh. You're a liberal.
And
keep going.
Made a bet. Wait.
Why are you ashamed of being a liberal?
Wait. Both of them would have made a much more better candidate and have.
A much more better candidate. Hillary got crushed by Donald Trump.
Yeah, because he colluded with the Russians. Look at this.
All right. Now let's have a conversation. Give me the proof that he colluded with Russia. Go.
Okay, go. His son got emails from Russians to come to expose Hillary Clinton emails. They came to America and in a treasonous fashion had a meeting on American soil to plot against a woman who was a senator, a secretary of state, and a woman who was married to both a president and an American governor.
Do you know that there was zero? All right, that's enough. I don't need the music. There was zero follow up to that meeting, and it was a colossal waste of time. And by the way, and let me ask you this. If you're so concerned about colluding with the Russians, what do you think about Hillary and our bought and paid for Russian dossier, Russian government lies to manipulate and lie to the American people? What do you think of that Russian collusion?
You're talking about GPS and Stone?
I'm talking about Hillary Clinton bought and paid for Russian lies so she could get elected and manipulate the American people. What do you think of it?
But are we talking about the dossier, Sean?
That would be the dossier she paid for, yes.
Right, but it started with a Republican.
Okay, check.
And then she picked it up afterwards.
You're wrong. You're wrong in this sense. It started with the Washington Free Beacon. Christopher Steele had nothing to do with that, no involvement in the research when it was the Washington Free Beacon. It was only after Hillary that was brought in that money started to flow to Christopher Steele, and he paid for the lies. So get your facts straight.
Here's the thing. Sean, here's the point.
What's the point? What is it?
None of this been disproven. I mean, I know you can go to the store and you can prejudice Hillary Clinton. You know, people
prejudice Hillary. Yeah.
Well, all right, like Pavlov's dog.
And what if Donald Trump paid for a dossier full of Russian lies against Hillary? Do you think you'd be a little more angry? You think you'd be a little bit more upset? I think you would be. Thank you. So good to talk to you. Appreciate it. Moses is in New Jersey. What's up, Moses? How are you?
What's happening, Sean? That last guest made me laugh. That was pretty funny.
It's pretty funny. What can
I do for you? You know, the one thing I want to say, Sean, you know, like every time, especially now, I know Megyn Kelly has this new interview, like a second one with Vladimir Putin, and it just drives me insane whenever I hear anybody from the left talk about Russian meddling and this is an attack on our country. And I'm a former Marine and I've been to Iraq. I know what an attack on Americans is. That's number one. Number two, when Russian meddling or Russian interference, that does not mean Russian impact. Because for Russian impact to like really take place, that means there has to be American ignorance. And I don't believe that. American people, we are smart. I'm not concerned about the information or fake news that some Russian troll or some Russian bot on Facebook is putting out. I'm more concerned about these Democratic senators that literally go on CNN or MSNBC on a daily basis and put out the same propaganda and lies once you fact check on a daily basis, influencing us. That's what I'm really concerned about, not some Russian Facebook troll farm.
Well, look, we don't want Russia is a hostile regime and a hostile actor. It's ironic that Russia is now accusing us of meddling in their election. You know, look, all these indictments of these Russians by Mueller, it's all for show. And it's basically is a political indictment so we can read the papers and he can make all the suggestions he wants that Donald Trump wanted this. But, you know, you can't have a one-way investigation. And that's what I keep pointing out here. Buddy is in Fort Lauderdale in Florida. What's up, Buddy? How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. I heard you talking about the heroin epidemic the other day, and I had to call because my girlfriend died from heroin 3 weeks ago, and I'm the one that found her.
Wow. Did you know she was an addict when you were dating her?
When I very first got with her, I didn't know, but I learned very quickly, and I got a drug education in 9 months that I've never had in my life.
Why did you keep dating a girl that's addicted to heroin? Why did you do that?
I felt sorry for her. I'm full of empathy. I said, you got to be saved. You can't help me. I can't stop this. I can't do it. I can't do it on my own. I said, I'm going to help you. He said, do anything. I want off it so bad. I put her through detox 4 times. I took her to doctors. I did everything possible. Every time she came out of detox, she was a different person. She was so amazed at how life really was. She says, please.
And what was the longest period of sobriety you had with her?
About 8 days.
Yeah.
And all it was she went back to friends. A friend showed up, and the last time the friend showed up, I resuscitated her 3 times in our 8 months. A friend showed up on this last time where she was really good, and bingo. She called me and said, oh, come pick me up at 10 o'clock. I bring her water. Bring me water, Advil. I walk in, and bam, she's on the floor with a needle next to her, and I couldn't resuscitate her.
Number one, I'm very sorry for her, and I'm very sorry for you. But the only thing I'll say, I've been talking about this new show on Showtime. I suggest everybody watch it. You should even make your kids watch it. It's called Trade. And you watch the show, and there's one mother in particular that's featured in the show, and she's got 2 kids that are drug addicts. And she keeps letting them back in the house. And she even says, this has ruined our entire family. And I know it's the hardest thing for people to do, and it's easier said than done, but when it's your kid, you know, the right thing to do is throw them out of the house. And say, don't come back until you're sober. Don't come back. These are the rules. And, you know, so the mother did everything she could do. And you can't save people that don't want to be saved. It's sad. It's really, really sad. And you see wasted human potential every day because of this epidemic. And we're not really doing a good job stopping this in any way. All right, Hannity, tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We're going to have our own list of people that we want to get their emails, we want to get their text messages, phone calls, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, Sebastian Gorka, John Solomon, and so much more. William Binney is going to join us as well. So set your DVR, 9 Eastern Hannity on the Fox News Channel. News information you won't get elsewhere. We'll see you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow. As always, thank you so much for being with us.